Welcome to the Foresight Health Roundup podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Burda, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Thursday, July 17th. We're not going to talk about the Epstein files on today's show, but we are going to talk about patient portals with Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you two doing this morning? Dave?
Well, I feel like we're between lives right now. We're moving from Chicago to West Michigan. Terry and I celebrated our 40th wedding anniversary last year. That means we're sifting through 40 plus years of stuff, and it's not easy. My friend David Burek says that three moves equals one fire. I think he's right. So how am I doing? I can't shake the feeling that I'm in perpetual motion.
Oh, man, that's a lot of miles. Thanks, Dave. Julie, how are you?
Wow. I feel like it's been a busy summer, but I'm feeling pretty fortunate that I'm not sifting through 40 years of stuff.
Just wait.
Good day. I know.
Well, okay. Before we talk about patient portals, I wanted to talk about your patient portal and what you think of them. Dave, tell me one thing you like about your portal and one thing you don't like.
Well, what I really like most are the ease and convenience and 24/7 accessibility. I mean, that's just a profound improvement over the way medical information used to get transmitted. What I like the least is the lack of interoperability. Because of Epic, my One Medical data doesn't incorporate with my Mayo and Northwestern apps, and that just feels stupid to me.
Yeah. And that's an easy fix if somebody wanted to do that. Julie, how about you? What's the best and worst of your portal?
Well, you know, since we've talked about this question a couple of times in the past, I started to think about what's changed, and nothing's really changed about my portal use except for the fact that there are just more of them. So I tried to count. I have three hospital Epic accounts, a One Medical account, a MIDI account, and they use Athena that I still haven't been able to get onto. And then my physical therapist has a platform. I have a few digital pharmacies, the health app on my phone and my watch, a few payment platforms, and probably more than I care to think of for some seemingly random ancillary services that were billed separately, of course. And then there's my dentist who forces me to write a check.
Wow, that is a long list.
I'm sure there's more, honestly. Yeah.
Well, my favorite thing about my portal is that I could access my test results and read them before my doctor, so no more waiting for the call or the secure message. My least favorite is that the very first screen you see after you log in tells me how much I owe them and whether I'd like to pay my balance now or later. And that also tells me what they care about most, and that's my money. So how do they not get that sends the wrong message right away? You know, why don't you just say, how are you feeling? Right? You know, not, you owe me money, you know? Okay, let's talk about what kind of message this new HHS report on patient portals is sending. The report is from the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Technology Policy / Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT. That's a mouthful. We used to just call it ONC. So much for government efficiency under the new administration. The report is based on data from something called the Health Information National Trend Survey, or HINTS, conducted by the National Cancer Institute. More than 7,000 people took the survey. And here's some of what it found. 77% of patients were offered an online portal last year from their provider or health plan. That's up from 59% in 2020. 65% of patients offered a portal last year accessed it at least once in 2024. That's up from 38% in 2020. Of patients encouraged to use their portal by their provider or health plan last year, 92% did so to look up test results, 87% looked up their medical records, and 82% viewed clinical notes from physicians. And 57% of patients used a mobile app to access their portal last year. That's up from 38% in 2020. Here are two things that I found most interesting. 59% of patients said they had multiple portals last year, you know, different ones from different providers and health plans. Of those with multiple portals, Only 7% used a portal organizing app to combine all their data from all their portals into one place. So, Julie, there's a solution for you. The fact that people need a separate app to organize all their patient portals tells you something. I'm not sure what, but that's why we have Dave Johnson and Julie Murchison on the show.
I'm glad to see this report. And I've got 4 points. And the first is, let's celebrate the increasing use and ease and access of digital health portals. It's been a long time coming, but the nation writ large has crossed the digital health threshold. That's a big deal. Still a lot of work to do, but the trend and momentum are strong. So it's time for a happy dance. More than half of Americans are using portals now. Second, the fact that most consumers like me, like Julie, like you, Dave, have more than one portal and that they don't talk to one another, like mine don't, like yours don't, is inexcusable. Epic's walled garden approach to data sharing is the primary culprit. Epic claims that people will die if they make their patient data interoperable. People are already dying because they don't. Their approach magnifies rather than diminishes health disparities. So no happy dance for that. Third, while the apps are improving, there is still way, way too much performance inconsistency. Phantom appointments occur too frequently. Data presented isn't always intelligible and can be downright scary. Getting the app is the starting point of a healthcare journey, nowhere near its culmination. So do the behind-the-scenes workflow work so that when you schedule an appointment, it works. When you read a test result, it's easy to understand. Come on, people, let's get it done. And the final point in our book, The Coming Healthcare Revolution, Paul Kusserow and I have a chapter titled The Aggregator's Advantage. Our belief is that winning healthcare companies will develop, quote, one app that covers the map. And in it, consumers will be able to engage with one trusted source for all their health and healthcare needs. This development, which, you know, this report is evidence of, portends an increasingly digital and virtual customer experience. You know, however, this message isn't sinking in. Last week, Northwestern announced plans to build a new $1 billion-plus patient tower on their main campus in Streeterville, some of the most expensive real estate in Chicago. And they aren't alone. Many health systems are undertaking major capital investment programs. Like Jethro Tull saying, they're living in the past. Asset-heavy healthcare is so 2015. So portal me to the future, Dave.
And that, in case you're wondering, audience, is the first Jethro Tull reference, I think. Very, very good, Dave. Thank you. Julie, any questions for Dave?
Dave, that was excellent. And yes, hallelujah, I'm getting there. So I was intrigued by the fact that, you know, 7% of people are kind of in your boat and use these aggregator apps. You know, basically pull all your information together, though 59% of us have multiple portals. So there's clear room to kind of figure this piece out, right?
Just a little.
Because just because we're using it doesn't mean we're really using it well.
Yeah.
So we used meaningful use, whether good or bad, to drive EHR adoption. You know, part of what happened is the challenge we have today. Should we use some sort of meaningful use program to, you know, drive the patient portal use in the right direction?
Yeah, it's age-old question, right? Top down or bottom up? Does the government mandate it or does the marketplace create it and then consumers demand it? I tend, as you know, to believe more in the bottom up approach, that companies come up with brilliant new ways to provide products and services and the customers flock to them, and that market momentum changes the whole supply-demand dynamics of industries. Healthcare, for all the reasons we talk about all the time, resists some of these, or not only resists, but actually forestalls some of the natural evolution of the marketplace, particularly relating to tech. Now, we do have interoperability mandates that the industry seems largely to ignore and has gotten away with. So I would like there to be a government requirement that says all data has to be interoperable, meaningful use has standards, and then let the marketplace adhere to those standards and come up with the great new ways to delight and service.
You know, I'm thinking of what type of app do I have most on my phone? And it's a parking app. Right? And anytime I drive anywhere that has metered parking, I have to have at least 8 of those.
At least.
You know? And then you have to preload them with money. Right. So I've got a lot of money tied up in parking apps. Anyways, just a side note there. So let's see the government fix that one. All right, Julie, it's your turn. What are your takeaways from the report? Did anything surprise you? And what can the market do? You know, we're just talking about the market to fix some of the problems identified in the report.
Well, like Dave, I was thrilled to see some of these numbers. And also, obviously, I feel the pain of some of these issues that were highlighted in the report. And I have to say, you know, since so much is going on with MyChart, we have to look at the fact that, you know, MyChart use is out of necessity, and I'm not so sure that anyone actually enjoys using it. And here's a little bit of an anecdote for that. So I recently talked with a health system who's been training large language models to do intent recognition, and they came up with 9 categories, and their whole goal is, you know, to automate these tasks of AI. So turns out the most popular consumer issue they tried to solve was helping consumers navigate MyChart. I mean, drop the mic. Of 9 categories in a major health system, that rose to the top as one of the biggest issues. So that just goes to show that, I mean, we know MyChart's like made for collecting and facilitating processes. It's not meant for providers' workflow, or certainly not designed around the consumer. So the first thing we need to do is, you know, make sure that everyone is focusing on, you know, world-class UX. We need better user design. And, you know, one of our investments is in a company called Vital that facilitates patient engagement in the emergency department. And their engagement rates are through the roof because the user experience is incredible. And what you can see and what you can do with the information is really built around how you'd want to act in that moment and what you need to know. And by the way, it cuts down on a lot of questions about where's the Starbucks for people, for caregivers. So I think we get to do a lot around UX. You know, by the way, I think the number one thing healthcare should do is hiring talent from outside healthcare. I mean, if you look at what we know versus what the real tech world knows, it's quite different. And if you look at just like what Amazon's doing, they highly personalize what we need. And they've looked at, I don't want to say the diversity of needs across populations the way we think about segmenting them in healthcare. They've looked at the diversity of needs across populations as it relates to what each person needs. I mean, if Amazon can do it, we can do it. And Providence has actually just spun a business out focused on doing this very thing for healthcare. So I don't know, there's hope. Number two, I would say we need to do more about providing caregiver access. As a mom, you know, some portals and some other non-healthcare apps make it very easy for me to help my kids manage versus not. And, you know, it's one thing if you're a mom, it's actually easier to sign up your minor who's younger than 18, 16, whatever. But think about like all the moms who are now daughters. And of course, there are some sons out there too who are taking care of parents. Like, it's not easy to get access to your parents' portal that your, by the way, your parents don't really use, right, as much. So listen, if Airbnb can do it, I can be a host and I can be a guest. Like, if they can do it, we can do it.
Yeah, there was some stat in the report, wasn't there, about, keep going, Julie, I'm going to look that up, see if I could find it, about caregiver access.
Yes, there was. And I mean, it's there, but we could do a lot more there.
Right.
And then the last thing I think that was so standout in this report is provider influence. Like, we should be doing a lot more about this. And, you know, let's make sure that there's something in it for the provider to talk to the patient about the portal. Like, can we reduce their admin burden? Yes, if it's done right. Can we improve patient engagement in their health and then impact outcomes? Yes, that can happen. So if we get smart about, you know, when and how we encourage providers to, you know, talk about the EHR, as we used to call it, you know, build in prompts into their workflows to recommend specific activities in the patient portal at a specific time, like giving your patient a little bit of homework. So there's a lot we could do. And I don't know, I could go on, but there's a few ideas there.
No, that's great. I just looked that up. It's 51% give proxy or caregiver access. So we're halfway there.
49% to go.
Dave, any questions for Julie?
Julie, I loved your discussion of user experience, one app that covers the map, and particularly the Amazon reference. Terry last week discovered Prime Day. Oh my God, it's downright scary. But anyway, here's my question for you. So portal me this. Epic has a study out finding that potential or that portal users have fewer no-show appointments among all age groups. That's, of course, very good news. The most tech-savvy users, 18 to 34-year-olds, however, had by far the highest no-show rates at around 10%. And they also had the smallest gap between those who use the portal and those who don't. What do you make of that?
Well, I'll be interested to see what you think of my answer, Dave, but two things come to mind. One is that the my chart is just not a native way to interact for the 18 to 34-year-olds. Like, they're not as apt to be on the web in clunky applications like that. They're in text. They're in Snap. They're in other things. Second, I don't know that this age group wants to get up and go to the doctor. Like, they're used to doing things online and they'd prefer it if they could. At least I think they would. So what do you think?
Well, I think that's absolutely true. And I think they also like sticking it to the man. And today, healthcare is the man. My guess is they know they're not showing up. And at some level, they just don't care as much. So, yeah, so I think you're right. The give me a bad user experience and overcharge me and make my life miserable. I don't care if I and
I skip your appointment.
I skip your appointment. Yeah.
Great interpretation. Clearly, we have a long way to go, but we've come a long way, too. I mean, the fact that we can access our personal health information from multiple devices 24/7, as you mentioned, Dave, certainly has shifted some of the power away from providers and insurers into patients. And that's a good thing. And we have to keep moving in that direction. All right, let's talk about what else happened this week in healthcare that's worth noting. Julie, what blipped on your radar?
Well, admittedly, this is a few weeks ago when we were on sabbatical. But Ascension just named Eduardo Conrado to be their next CEO. And this is notable because he's not a healthcare guy. He comes from big Fortune 500 outside of healthcare, Fortune 100 outside of healthcare. And he's come into Ascension. He's looked at that system as a business and asked it, okay, you know, where are we doing well? Where are we underperforming? How do we right-size the system? How do we right-size service lines? How do we scale what's working? And, you know, the business is performing. So I appreciate the fact that they've, you know, given him that role, or he's earned that role for what he's done.
All right, Dave, what other healthcare news should people know about?
Well, that's a really good one, Julie. I interviewed Eduardo a couple of years ago, and that guy is a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, he is.
So let's hope he accelerates transformation at Ascension. That'll be a good case study for the rest of the industry. You know, I've tried to, you know, see the better angels of RFK Jr. at HHS and his commitment to making America healthy again. But this week he ousted his chief of staff, Heather Flick Melanson, and deputy chief of staff, Hannah Anderson, both very accomplished, highly respected government and industry veterans, considered rational actors. It's just another really bad sign that RFK is letting his personal agenda override balanced policy development and execution. Increasingly, it looks like Carolyn Kennedy was right about her cousin.
Watch what he does. Don't listen to what he says, right? So thanks, Dave. And thank you, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can subscribe to The Roundup on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health. We'll be right back.